I'm just thinking to myself, like, is this also a side effect of where we are right now? The market gets so crazed when things happen that are happening right now, right, with price movement and other things. And so I feel like there's always like this land grab that happens, trying to capture as much of the upside as possible among some of these projects and really positioning themselves for growth through the next market cycle.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join me, Ryan Stubbe, Director of Bitcoin Mining, alongside our team of experts, Jason Ward, the head of FCAT Blockchain and Crypto, Parth Gargava, head of digital asset startups in Fidelity Labs, and Jack Newrider, associate at F Prime Capital. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer. We're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
All right, so a couple of themes that I think we wanted to dig into today. The first theme is around Ethereum and a new proposal that came out last week around kind of Ethereum's consensus layer, what they're calling Meme Chain in this new proposal. And that was something that came out of DevCom in Bangkok. So talk a little bit about what it is, why it's important, maybe where there are still some gaps. And of course, you know, to be balanced, also talk about some of the opposition, you know, and some of the, you know, pushback that it's received since it's been proposed. And then the second theme is really going to be around kind of a post-election, just kind of looking at what's happening more broadly on the landscape. You know, we were reflecting a little earlier on this. It feels like, you know, leading up to the election, there was obviously a lot of election related news, a lot of prediction markets related news, as we covered last week. But since the election has now come and gone, and you know, the outcome is now known, it feels like there's been, you know, the floodgates have opened, and there's been a slew of new kind of product announcements that, you know, seemingly are related to, you know, the fact that, you know, there's some clarity on the political and potentially the regulatory landscape moving forward. So we'll talk a little bit about what some of those announcements are and you know, kind of some of the trends we're seeing there. So I think just to jump in, Parth, you want to maybe just take a step back and talk about, you know, how we got here with respect to Ethereum's consensus layer, right? You know, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago now that we, you know, got the original Beacon Chain, and it feels like not that long ago, right? It was obviously a really big undertaking, and now they're already talking about what's next, right? So I think that's really interesting, and yeah, maybe just some thoughts on kind of, you know, where we see things going, and maybe some specifics around the proposals that have been made.
So Ryan, I'll do you one better. What I'm going to do is I'll do a really simple ETH 101, and so hopefully this is, you know, this helps people who are new to the Ethereum landscape. But you have three main components on Ethereum. So you have the execution layer, which takes care of your smart contracts, all your decentralized applications, your DeFi, is all of that activity happens on an execution layer. The second is the data layer, where your data is stored. So if Jason participated in a DeFi protocol, all those states or all those activity, that information is stored on the data layer. And then the third one is the consensus layer, which takes care of network security. That's where you stake your Ethereum and you validate transactions, right? So those are the three main core components. Now, in order to talk about the announcement which just happened, I want to take a few steps back and give you some context with it. And then you be the judge on what you think about it. So there is a core developer by the name of Justin Drake. He became extremely popular for coordinating multiple efforts during the merge in 2022. Now, prior to DevCon, which is this annual Ethereum conference, he made a pretty big announcement on Twitter saying that he's going to reveal the biggest project of his lifetime. So there was already, you know, a lot of hype around it. And the fun part was no one actually knew even the name of the talk. And so once that announcement happened at DevCon, which is the Beam chain, I think for a lot of us, it was slightly underwhelming because the expectations were so high. So let's talk about the Beam chain. Well, Beam chain is an alternative way to look at the Ethereum roadmap. So the way Ethereum's roadmap is laid out is that you have the end game, and to get to the end game, you have various phases. We did the merge, then there's the surge, the verge, the purge, and so on and so forth. Now, what Justin proposed is that we build and ship this thing all at once in a package. So I'll go into specifics, but if you remember a few years ago, we had the Beacon chain or the proof of stake chain, which was built and it was functioning independently. And one fine day, on the day of the merge, we popped out the proof of work chain and we inserted the proof of stake chain or the Beacon chain, right? And that's exactly what he's proposing, right? Which is, hey, let's build a consensus layer with all the modern technology focused on zero knowledge proofs. Let's build it independently. And at some point in time in the future, we'll pop out the Beacon chain and replace it with this new chain, which has all these amazing features on the new consensus layer.
So what are some of those features? I know, you know, we talk a lot about ZKP and you know, all of these more kind of bleeding edge technologies. And this feels like this would probably take that some of that tech mainstream, right? Because it's obviously a very foundational component of ETH in the network, as you highlighted earlier, right? Yep. So what are some of these updates that are being made and why? Why would they want to be implemented?
So that's a great question. Why propose a redesign now when Beacon Chain is just 5 years old? Well, the first is staking, right? So how do you have better issuance? How do you have a small validator size? The Ethereum community has spoken about, hey, every single person should be able to run a node. And so what this proposes is that you can have just one ETH to stake and you can start running a node as opposed to 32. And then another part is just faster block time of around four seconds. Right now it's around 15 seconds. How do we get it to 4 seconds? The second big component is just advanced cryptography. So there is something called as ZK snarks or zero knowledge proofs. And so the idea would be, how do you snarkify or make the chain with zero knowledge proofs so that it's highly performant, it's quicker, and at the same time, it's also quantum resistant. So in case, you know, you have a quantum computer in the next 5-6 years, well, you want to make sure that your information, your confidential information, should not be decrypted. And so, you know, those are some essentially a lot of the major components.
So we talked a little bit about you know, how the community has reacted to this. And I guess I think Jason had some commentary on this as well, so I'd love to get your thoughts. But my, you know, so reducing the you know, required balance from 32 to 1 ETH, right, to potentially decentralize the validator set and reduce the kind of capital requirements associated with running a validator is certainly very interesting. But it also runs counter to one of the other proposals. I think it's EIP 7521, which is meant to increase the maximum, the effective balance of a validator from 32 to, I think it's over 2000, 2000 and mm-hmm. I forget the exact number. Yeah, 2048. It feels like these things are maybe like, can they coexist? It feels like maybe they're running counter with one another. And I guess it just speaks to the decentralized, you know, the crowdsourcing of potential solutions here as we think about kind of the next phase of Ethereum development and how some of those proposals may run counter to one another, right?
Well, the cost of Ethereum is essentially, or the value of Ethereum is decentralization, right? And so the idea would be, if I have just one ETH, I should be able to participate and add security to the network. Sure, if I have 2,000 ETH, I can still do it and I can get those auto-compounding rewards. But I think you're spot on about how this announcement was received, especially on Twitter. What I saw that a lot of people, and you know, one of the most important part, which I think I've missed, is that when Justin Drake proposed the Beam chain, he did, in terms of timelines, he committed to, you know, the next 5 years to 2029. And when the Ethereum Foundation or core developer says 2029, that's probably 2031, 2032. That's like way, way out there. So a lot of people got disappointed with respect to the timeline when they said, you know, the final Beam chain will be out in 2029. And the way they put it out was 1 year is going to be focused on pilling or just spreading awareness, getting that soft social consensus. The second one is going to be on speccing and then building and then testing testing it a lot, right? Right. And so I think that's what tripped people a lot, where a lot of people were hoping that this would be the end game implementation of Ethereum, but it's just one component, which is a consensus layer.
Yeah. So Parth, I love the way you describe that. And Ryan, I'm really glad you asked the question about the maximum effective balance, because you do have this diversity of interest. But when I think about what's being proposed here, the analogy I would draw is that you've got a car, and right now it's a very efficient car, but you want to swap out the engine and make it more efficient for the future, and perhaps be able to take in some new type of fuel, whether it be a range or something that's specifically designed for it. So Parth, I think you're right about the timing being one of the big hangups. And from the things that I've read, it sounds like people were like, wait, how long? And for what? Like, didn't we just do this? So if you're going to swap out an engine, you don't want a 5-year project. You really hopefully want something much shorter than that so that you can reap the benefit, because frankly, the pace of the change in this space is so fast. Who knows what 5 years from now will look like?
Well, I'm probably going to give some pushback here, because I think that's the cost of decentralization. Like a lot of people are like, hey, you know, why the hell is it taking 5 years? Why not do it in the next 2 years? But I think, you know, ETH has 5 different consensus clients, which means 5 clients have to go build it and ship it. Then they need to sync with each other. So they need to have consensus amongst the consensus clients. And so when you compare this against L1s like Aptos or even Solana, all of these guys have just one consensus client each, right? And so for Ethereum, you almost want to go slow and careful when you do any of these changes. Like and the other part is Ethereum is not some, you know, random L1 with little activity. It is the second, you know, biggest blockchain in the world with 60 billion in TVL, thousands of decentralized applications dependent on it. So if you want to make a big, massive change to how the core protocol works, well, A, you have to make a proposal, which Justin did, and get some social consensus. Then you have to define specs for not just engineers, but also researchers. The third thing is you have to build it in such a way that it's backwards compatible, so you don't break the other thousands of decentralized applications. And then you have to test it a million gazillion times. So the worst case scenario would be, you know, you have a bug or a small exploit, and that causes, you know, millions of people to lose money.
I think it's a really fair point, Parth, right? I think, and you don't have to go far to find other examples of this. I mean, Bitcoin arguably moves much slower, right, than Ethereum has moved in terms of making some of these updates, right? So I think it is a really fair point that there's a lot at risk here, you know, from a value perspective, from a reputational perspective, that and just from a logistical, you know, standpoint, that we, you know, needs to be worked through, you know, to get to day one, right?
Yeah, I do agree with Jason's point, and this is something which I think the crypto community has to do better. Like Beam Chain is a great technical effort, but it also highlights how bad decentralized organizations are at messaging and branding. I feel like there's almost this open space for a good messaging or branding company to help.
Well, and efficient governance, right? Yeah. Like being able to achieve consensus amongst the stakeholders has been proven to be really challenging. Pretty much across all DAOs, there's examples everywhere of this. It's not just, you know, around ETH, which, you know, obviously has the foundation to kind of help keep things, you know, organized.
Yeah. And what's funny is that when you compare this to Bitcoin, well, Bitcoin has the simplest narrative. But then when you think about other L1s, they're, you know, still pretty much run by like a handful of people. And so Ethereum gets stuck in the middle where, you know, if to us, Ethereum is this, you know, exciting technological breakthrough. But then there's also like $400 billion of underlying asset on it. And so it's hard to expect buy-ins from a CTO or a CEO of a big firm if they want to look into tokenization, where if they're just spending 5 minutes reading the news and they hear Beamchain 2030, 2031, what's going on? Well, it's natural tendency for them to say, hey, you know, is Ethereum going away? Is nothing happening in the next 5 years? Should I even build on this? And so I think you want to take away that complexity in the messaging. And that's something which I feel like a lot of these decentralized organizations can do a good job at.
I agree with you guys. And it was funny. I was going to say, I find it ironic that you're talking about trying to get consensus over how to change a consensus mechanism.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's duplicative. I'm not quite sure.
It's a good point. And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, like, is this also a side effect of where we are right now? Like, if this announcement had been made a year ago, six months ago, right?
Agreed.
It probably would have gone off fine, right? But the market gets so crazed when, you know, things happen that are happening right now, right? With price movement and other things, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's always like this land grab that, you know, happens, you know, trying to capture as much of the upside as possible among some of these projects and really positioning themselves for growth through the next market cycle, right? So I feel like that there may be some of that at play too, you know, as it pertains to this announcement and probably others too. And I think that's a good segue into our next part of the discussion, which is where things are at. You know, I think promised to revisit, you know, post-election kind of what was happening in the industry. Jason, I know you had kind of gathered some stats, and then Parth, you had some specific announcements that you wanted to talk to. Jason, maybe let's get started on this by maybe talking a little bit about some of the flows we've seen, price movement, things like that.
Yeah, I'm happy to. And you know, just before I do that, I'll just acknowledge really quickly that the talk that we're referencing here, Justin Drake, is just one of several that took place at DevCon, and there are other proposals out there. So, one thing's for sure is that there's lots of ideas, but Ryan, to your point about people's sense of urgency, we do find at times when we have this type of price action, there is a little bit more attention focused on time as opposed to the actual content and complexity of what you're doing. So just to share a few stats, over the past week, globally, crypto funds pulled in net $2.19 billion of flows last week. So it actually represented about $3 billion in and about $866 million out. So it was really almost like a tale of 2 weeks. A big run-up in the beginning, a little bit of a sell-off towards the end of the week. But most of the flows were for Bitcoin-related products. But that being said, the Ethereum products saw their largest weekly net inflows since they began trading in the U.S. in July. So all that backdrop, you've got Bitcoin had topped 93,000. You had Ethereum back trading over, I believe, 3,100. I don't know if it got to 3,200, but you're seeing this type of increased price action, which seems to be largely driven by post-election considerations and people perhaps questioning whether some of the veil of uncertainty has been lifted based on projected points of view on how regulatory environments may evolve or how basically adoption may increase in the coming years.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And so I think that kind of leads us into some of the more concrete announcements and events that have happened. And I think the first thing to kind of highlight is maybe the group of AGs that are suing the SEC. Jason, you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll move into the other stories.
Sure. So last week it was announced that 18 attorneys generals and the DeFi Education Fund have brought a suit against the United States Securities Exchange Commission. So in this case, the plaintiffs are arguing basically that the SEC has overreached. And within the argument, the plaintiffs are asking for the court to rule that a digital asset transaction is not an investment contract. Therefore, you know, thinking about the Howey test. And the plaintiffs are also asking for the court to prevent the SEC from bringing charges in the future quote, premised on the failure of digital asset platforms facilitating secondary transactions to register as securities exchanges, dealers, brokers, or clearing agencies. So basically, this is related to classification of tokens that are transacted. It seems to be focused on the secondary market, although I haven't read all of the details. But it's important to note in this context that all 18 of the attorneys generals who are parties to this suit are from the Republican Party. So you might question, is the timing of this related to the election outcome? I don't know. But the point here in many cases is they're arguing for states' rights. And it's not unique to crypto. It just happens to also be occurring here in the context of crypto.
And you're seeing some of that in the industry as well, right? So Ryan, you'd be surprised to see, but there's been tons of product announcements after the election.
Yeah, right. I've seen some, but maybe let's like highlight some of what we've seen in the last, you know, few weeks.
I would say I've seen close to like 21 to 22 product announcements. And so I'm going to give you the ones which I think are pretty interesting. And it's almost that crypto product development is making a comeback, right? So you had a lot of this pent up energy for the last 6 months leading up to the election of crypto companies not making announcements. Or just sitting tight, you know, twiddling their thumbs.
A lot of uncertainty in the market, right?
Right. And yeah. So some of the notable announcements are BlackRock has decided to expand Biddle to a bunch of different chains outside of Ethereum. So now they're live on Optimism, Polygon, Aptos, Arbitrum. So that's one big announcement. So their Biddle is going multi-chain. Coinbase, which is, you know, a relatively conservative exchange platform compared to the Asian exchanges like Binance, launched meme coins on their platform. And they also launched virtual bank accounts globally in the same week. And they're using Stripe or Bridge for it. The third one is that there's a company called AllianceBernstein, and they put out a memo for their investors, which was titled, "Welcome to the Bull Market, Buy Everything You Can." Which I thought was hilarious.
Like,
I think
that this out. Is, yeah.
And they put that out.
Yeah. Right. Not so, investment advice, though. Let's be clear.
Not from us. Yeah. Not from the three of us here. just reiterating what's already been written. Yeah. Right. I mean, they do a lot of research in this space in general, and they're generally very, I think, based on kind of the analyst reports that I see, generally very bullish. Right.
Yeah. And then more on the DeFi side, you're seeing a lot of these protocols like Uniswap and Blur, who are now actively discussing fee switch, which means that now if you are a Uni token holder, a Blur token holder, how do you get value accrued if you're holding the token? So just a lot of, you know, fun, good announcements. And one which I want to call out is the one which is around BlackRock's Biddle. It's actually interesting to see that they are now multi-chain, but they left out Base and Solana. And I don't know what the reason is.
That is interesting. Yeah.
Right? Because you would imagine that BlackRock and Coinbase have a strong working relationship, but it's not deployed on Base or Solana, which I thought was really interesting. The other part was it's actually deployed on Polygon and a few other chains. And those chains have tokens like the Matic token, which has been pretty heavy scrutiny by the SEC.
Right.
So it's interesting to see a big firm like BlackRock deploy and just go bore there.
Well, I think if my memory is correct, and we can certainly validate this if it's not, but I think Biddle is offered to you entities that are outside of the U.S. So I don't know if that has a plays any function in whether or not it's they choose to list on Base, but. Either way, I've seen some other announcements too. I believe Franklin Templeton announced that Benji is now going to train on Ethereum proper. So, what this all sort of does?
Yeah, are there any like tokenized treasury products on Base? Do we know at the moment?
I think actually you have BlackRock here, total asset value of around 500 million, and initially this was all on Ethereum, but now you can see that it's actually divided into Polygon, Avalanche, Optimism, Arbitrum, and a bunch of others. And then other treasury products like by Ondo. Securitize has actually made a lot of product announcements too post-election. So they're kind of the back end for a lot of these tokenization platforms. But you can see how you have Franklin Templeton here, Superstate, a bunch of others. But I'm not really sure what they have on Base. I think that's that's something which is worth checking out.
And yeah. So Parth, you're sharing RWA.xyz, so real world assets.xyz. But I think what this all does is it further emphasizes the calls for increased security token adoption across the globe. And we've seen this. When you talk about the fact that this or these products may be available in more than one location, it in my mind is very similar to the way we see multi-listed securities. And you can have the same equities settling in a number of depositories across a number of geographic distributions because these issuers want to meet their investors where they're at. So I think this is really about increasing the total addressable market and expanding their reach.
Yeah, and I think Templeton does have some Benji on base, right? So I wonder too, like if you think about, you know, making the strategic decision where or where not to issue, like if who else is issuing on that you know platform, L2 whatever it is a consideration. I would imagine it probably is, right? So yeah. I think disclaimer is we're not sitting around any of these tables making these strategic decisions. It's just, you know, some of these could be a coincidence in timing, but others are certainly related to what's going on in the world, right?
Well, I think that's a big message that if you deploy Biddle on Optimism and Arbitrum and Polygon and you kind of eliminate Base, which has the most amount of on-chain activity, then that is, I'm sure it's strategic, right? It's not something which they left out. For Solana, my speculation is that, again, all speculation, but I feel like Solana has just become so popular for meme coins and just, you know, great UX, but a lot of like no real institutional stuff. All of that is actually most happening on Aptos, on Ethereum. And so that's why I think they probably decided to
One of the stories, speaking of meme coins, that you hit on very quickly is around Coinbase's support of meme coins. That's very interesting.
Well, Coinbase is known to be so conservative, and and the whole game for Binance early on to get market traction was to list a lot of these meme coins, and now it's actually funny because now you see Coinbase also, you know, going in that process where they have Pepe coin and Viv coin and all these tokens. And we know that these are memes, like there's possibly nothing of high utility here, but it forces other exchanges that had meme coins as their moat to now get better and focus on other products as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great point. And that'll be interesting to kind of watch moving forward, right? Because that's obviously been a relatively hot button issue from a regulatory standpoint. Obviously, the SEC has gone, you know, after some of the other kind of major crypto tokens, right? Digital assets. But I mean, it's possible that, you know, meme coins are also within that scope, the current of regulatory scrutiny at the moment, right? And I think, again, like as we move forward over the next year plus, how these things end up being kind of designated under new and or existing, you know, law regulation, yep, right? I think that'll be something to watch for sure.
It does look like a moment of liberation from a product standpoint when a lot of these companies are doing announcements left and right, like even Coinbase doing meme coins, or the fact that you can open up a virtual US bank account, which is linked to your self-custodial wallet using Stripe, using Bridge. A lot of these things, you know, would probably get heavily scrutinized on, but I think it's that moment of liberation for some of these companies.
It's an exciting time. hopefully it continues in this relatively positive direction. You know, I'm the skeptic of the crowd here, so we'll see what happens. But certainly a lot of really interesting developments, a lot of really interesting products that are coming to market. So you know, it'll be really interesting and fun to watch over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months at least, potentially longer. So
one thing's for sure is we should not be short on topics to discuss.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to be a matter of how we decide what topics, how we can filter through all that noise and brings the best topics to everyone. So that's our obligation for the next, or our mandate for the next 6 months. So, well, thank you guys so much for this discussion. It was really great. Really enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks everyone for joining live, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your week.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.